What if the deepest truths about reality weren't found in abstract concepts, but in physical spaces you could walk through, touch, and smell? George Weibel's Letters to a Young Catholic upends our assumptions about religious education by inviting readers on a pilgrimage, not through theological arguments, but through actual places where Catholicism's distinctive worldview becomes palpable. From Baltimore's neighborhood parishes to Rome's ancient basilicas, from Poland's sites of martyrdom to Mexico's Shrine of Guadalupe, these locations reveal something startling. Catholicism isn't primarily a set of ideas to be debated, but an embodied way of seeing reality itself. This approach matters because in our increasingly virtual world, we've forgotten that truth has texture, that holiness has weight, that grace works through the stuff of everyday life. The journey ahead explores how this sacramental vision, seeing the extraordinary within the ordinary, offers a radically different way of being human in the modern world. Growing up Catholic in mid-century Baltimore meant inhabiting a parallel universe. The neighborhood was the new cathedral parish. Holy days brought unexpected freedom from school. Meatless Fridays marked you as different, and fasting before communion distinguished insiders from outsiders. This formation cultivated what novelist Flannery O'Connor called the habit of being, a distinctively Catholic way of perceiving reality. This sacramental imagination forms Catholicism's beating heart. Unlike either-or thinking, Catholic vision embraces both and: nature and grace, faith and reason, scripture and tradition, body and soul. This perspective elevates the material world, recognizing physical reality as a window into transcendent truth. When Catholics bless themselves with holy water or genuflect before the tabernacle, these aren't mere symbols, but encounters with divine reality through physical means. This vision extends beyond formal religious practice. A Catholic might see in a sunset not just atmospheric phenomena, but a reflection of divine beauty. In human love, not just biological attraction, but a glimpse of God's self-giving nature. As poet Jared Manley Hopkins expressed it, "The world is charged with the grandeur of God." This sacramental lens contrasts sharply with modern Gnostic imagination, the view that material reality is meaningless, manifesting in technology promising freedom from bodily limitations and ideologies denying biological significance. Beneath St. Peter's Basilica lies the Scavi, an ancient necropolis containing what archaeologists believe is St. Peter's actual tomb. The descent from Baroque splendor to humble grave reveals a profound truth. Catholicism embraces the grittiness of human existence rather than fleeing from it. Consider Peter himself. The rock upon whom Christ built his church was initially anything but solid. Impetuous and unreliable, he denied Jesus 3 times before grace transformed him into a fearless apostle and martyr. The church's inclusion of Peter's failures in Scripture reveals that weakness has been part of Catholic reality from the beginning. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem embodies this paradox. Christianity's most sacred shrine appears as a chaotic jumble, competing denominations governed by Ottoman-era regulations, monks hustling tourists, poor lighting, and strange smells. Yet beneath this grittiness lies profound truth. If God entered history in the flesh, why should we be repelled by history's messiness? This challenges both religious sentimentalism and secular cynicism. Against those seeking pristine spirituality, Catholicism insists that grace works through, not despite, our humanity. Unlike perfectionist spiritualities demanding immediate transformation, Catholicism recognizes that growth in virtue is gradual and often marked by failure. The sacrament of confession institutionalizes this reality, providing not just forgiveness, but the grace to begin again. The Dormition Abbey on Jerusalem's Mount Zion houses a life-size statue of the Virgin Mary asleep atop a sarcophagus, surrounded by mosaic portraits of Old Testament women, a space inviting contemplation of authentic discipleship. Even Karl Wojtyla, later Pope John Paul II, initially struggled with Marian devotion, fearing it might compromise worship of Christ. During Nazi occupation, he discovered that authentic Marian piety always points to Christ. Mary's last recorded words, "Do whatever he tells you," perfectly capture her role as one who directs us beyond herself. Hans Urs von Balthasar proposed that Mary represents the foundation of Christian discipleship. Her fiat, "Be it done unto me according to your word," establishes the pattern for all followers. From the Annunciation to silently receiving her son's body at the cross, Mary demonstrates that authentic freedom isn't doing whatever we want, but aligning our will with God's purpose. For young people struggling with commitment in a culture of keeping options open, Mary offers counterintuitive wisdom. True fulfillment comes from giving oneself away in love. This law of the gift, that we find ourselves by losing ourselves, stands at the heart of Christian anthropology. Mary's discipleship challenges both religious sentimentality and feminist critiques. Against those who reduce her to plaster statue perfection, authentic devotion recognizes her as a real woman facing genuine struggles. Against those who see her reinforcing female passivity, her radical fiat represents cooperation with divine purpose transcending gender categories. Castle Howard in Yorkshire, the model for Brideshead in Evelyn Waugh's novel, provides the backdrop for observing a Catholic conversion. Brideshead Revisited follows Charles Ryder, a lonely Oxford student who befriends Sebastian Flight, youngest son of Lord Marchmain. Through this friendship, Charles undergoes a conversion to the Baroque, first tasting natural beauty and intense friendship, then experiencing a higher but incomplete love for Julia, Sebastian's sister. Charles's friendship with Sebastian represents the first rung on his ladder of love, giving him his first taste of a happy childhood. His later love for Julia, though adulterous, represents a nobler yet still incomplete love. Their attempt to create an Arcadia cannot satisfy their deepest yearnings. Lord Marchmain's deathbed scene crystallizes their realization that their relationship cannot fulfill their spiritual hunger. When they part, they take the hardest step up the ladder toward the love that is the hardest, most brilliant of all. Modern critics misread the novel as Charles recognizing his spiritual and social distance from a doomed Catholic family. Instead, it's about a providential plan where good is educed from ill, meaning from the seeming chaos of events. The novel asks, is life a permanent pleasure hunt or about learning to love? Living in the gap between who we are and who we ought to be defines the spiritual life. The Sistine Chapel stuns millions into silence, not just by its beauty, but by something deeper, beauty as a window into truth about humanity and transcendence. In April 1994, Pope John Paul II celebrated Mass there, proposing that Michelangelo's frescoes were themselves sacramental, visible realities through which we encounter the invisible God. John Paul described Michelangelo as a man of Christian conviction who dared to admire with his own eyes God at creation. By depicting Adam as a visible icon of the Creator in naked physical beauty, Michelangelo boldly transferred this visible and corporal beauty to the Creator himself. The Pope called the Sistine Chapel the sanctuary of the theology of the human body. Human bodies aren't objects, they're icons. The New York Times completely misunderstood, suggesting the Pope wasn't embarrassed by the nudes despite the Church's conservative teachings on sex. In fact, John Paul celebrated Michelangelo's work because of Catholic teaching. Sexual love within marriage is itself an icon of God's interior life, a sacramental reality revealing truth about God and ourselves. John Paul's theology of the body teaches that our bodies aren't machines we inhabit. We are embodied beings. We're made in God's image through our capacity for communion through self-gift. Original sin corrupted this self-giving into self-assertion. Catholic sexual ethics channels desire toward true communion, not mere self-control, but self-mastery, enabling authentic self-gift. The Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe reveals Catholicism's power of inculturation. When the Virgin Mary appeared to Juan Diego in 1531 as a mestiza using native symbols, millions sought baptism within 7 years, perfectly enculturated evangelization. This illuminates the new evangelization, where the Church rediscovers it doesn't merely have a mission, but is a mission. St. Patrick's Church in London's Soho exemplifies this. The restored church houses magnificent liturgical space and a basement serving the homeless, with the Eucharist, daily Mass, and adoration powering everything. SPES, St. Patrick's Evangelization School, forms young adults through all-in Catholicism, catechesis, prayer, street evangelization, and service. Beautiful liturgy flows naturally into works of charity, rejecting false divisions between social justice Catholics and pro-life Catholics. Contrary to secularist predictions, the world grows more religious. Catholicism is moving south, with explosive growth in Africa, Latin America, and Asia. By 2025, 3/4 of Catholics will live south of the equator. In a world of virtual reality and disembodied experience, Catholicism's sacramental vision offers deeper encounter with reality. Grace works through matter, truth has texture, holiness happens in history. You stand at history's cutting edge, part of a global movement rediscovering the world is charged with God's grandeur. The invitation? Step into this sacramental vision and make the invisible God visible through your embodied daily life.